Hi, I'm Linda Fanaris, host of the B2B Brand 180 podcast and CEO of Millennium Agency, where we talk about branding and growth strategies. Before I start, I just want to take a moment and thank our audience today. And if you like what you heard, please hit like, share, or subscribe to help our channel grow. And today I'm excited to bring in Neil Rogers. He has a great background in sales and marketing. He's worked with a large variety of clients and verticals, including pharma, biomedical, manufacturing, logistics, financial, and the list goes on. And he's also the owner of Rogers Marketing. So welcome, Neil, to the B2B Brand 180 podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Linda. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So I would love you to give our audience a little bit of an introduction from your words about yourself.
Well, I'm the seventh of eight of an Irish Catholic family. Grew up outside of Boston, went in, kind of had fits and starts after high school, trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, and wound up behind the bar and learned a lot about people, about organization, about, you know, proper greetings, proper send-offs, how to understand products, how to manage my time. And essentially, on looking back in a retrospect, said, well, it's a lot about sales. Mm-hmm. So I then, through COVID, as a COVID project, wrote the book Bar Tips. And a lot of that, as we talk a little about that, kind of dovetails with my whole story. So, yeah.
That's great. I'm looking forward to digging a little deeper into that. So, you know, Napoleon Hill wrote Think and Grow Rich. If you can't do great things, do small things in a great way. Why does that quote mean so much to you?
Because going back to my early roots, coming out of high school, I was 17 years old. Again, as I mentioned, the seventh of eight of a Irish family. And it's not like it was today where we've got our kids mapped out from DNA right up until they're off. And even then beyond, you know, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I just became a philosophy that I just adopted, that just one foot ahead of the other. You know, I flunked. I mean, you're talking to probably the only person you know that flunked out of two community colleges. So, as an example, so at some point in time, I decided, okay, I better get serious about this stuff, or where am I going to go? And that's the philosophy I took. So when we read Think and Grow Rich, I think it's about 15 years ago now, I was like, oh my goodness. So a lot of this stuff that I wrote about, I innately did. You know, it's just, and some of it came from, I guess, it couldn't be the way. You know, it wasn't really something that we were encouraged as kids growing up. Hey, Neil, just get a little better every day.
Right.
But as I went out and created my own philosophy and figured, okay, do I want to be a loser or do I want to be something? Well, if I tried to take something on all at once, I got frustrated. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, the heck with that. Let's move on to something else. So I developed the philosophy of, well, it turns out to be do small things greatly, but I just called it, just take one, do the one right next step and just inch your way forward. And I did. And here I am.
That's awesome. I know I always talk about incremental improvements, right? Yep. No,
we're not,
and you also.
We're not putting the atom.
Nope, we're not. So what is positive activity? What
positive activity is the marriage of two things. One, it's about... Boy, where are we now? My daughter was a Division I athlete and played lacrosse in college. And she had a career-ending head injury.
Oh, boy.
And spent her natural senior year home with us in post-concussion syndrome. And this was not too long after, you know, the 2008 bust. And so our business still hadn't recovered all that well. So we were feeling a little squeamish about that. And obviously we had her at home. We had all these things going on. And one of the things, she was so severely injured that she really couldn't drive. So this accident happened in October. She drove again in July.
Okay.
So she was not reading and not driving and whatnot for a long time. But she was listening to books and listening to things like Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, and said to my wife one day, hey, would you, there's this conference up at the, I don't even know what it's called at the time, Clarion or the Crown Plaza here in Nashua.
Oh, yes.
And it's about mindful behaviors. Would you take me? Lori goes, sure. She took her. So she's walking around and Lori started to get into the conversations with these people and talk about the law of attraction and mindful behaviors and all of that. So we started to adopt those things into our lives. We're disciples of Sean Acor's Happiness Advantage. We're also Four Agreements people. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. all of these books that, when I talk to people like you or anybody that I've been interviewed on, I bring those up, everybody just nods their head. Oh yeah, that's the one we use. And so we then took some of those philosophies or the actual chores that they outline, and we put them into our lives. So mm-hmm. we do things like we're all yoga people. Mm-hmm. We meditate. We do the gratitude practice. We do all of the things, four or five things every day to get our minds right. So the ditty that goes along with positive activity is, it is the practice, because we are yogis, right? Nothing's a perfect. The practice of getting your mindset into a place where you are in creativity. So now you're open-minded, divergent thinking, creatively thinking. So you no longer see problems, you only see solutions. And all this stuff started ringing true as to how we had been operating a lot to begin with, without the actual practices, right?
Right.
So, and then you have, once you're in that creative mode and you're solution providing, now you can be productive. Now you're in that productivity. So what are your productivity steps? So the ones that we have in the initial foray of positive activity are business development steps. Mm-hmm. Here are the 7 or 8 things I've been doing for 37 plus years, both from when I was in the food business and when I was mm-hmm. in the athletic apparel and footwear business. So we're in the promo business the last 27 years. And it's been the same things. And that is what has propelled our business. Whenever I got off of those things, that's when it went south.
Oh, right.
We didn't do as well. And so in this case, it's again 7 or 8 business development practices, but I use it in my personal life. I use it for my music.
Yeah. Right? So how would you, since this is a channel for our B2B clients or sure. B2B listeners, how do you take that theory around positive activity? How do you apply it to somebody who's either in a marketing department, running a business, somebody that handles the finances? Can you articulate to our audience today,
sure,
like what type of value would that bring to those individuals when they're working?
Well, first of all, getting your mind right, and I think it's a big topic today, is paramount to starting off your day. If you're mm-hmm. starting with your head in your emails, it's not a good place to start, in our view, right? Get your mind right. Be ready for the day. Shift your mindset to be happier, because we control most of our own happiness. It's not the stuff we have. We just, by shifting and thinking about 3 things that you're grateful for in the last 24 hours. And if you can intentionally recall something that really, really was awesome and mm-hmm. write it and articulate it on a journal, you start getting, you're in that place. So now you're in that place, you're in productivity. What are your productivity steps? That's up to you. In our world, it's about business development. Well, yep. How are we going to get new clients? How are we going to keep the ones we have? How are we going to grow within them? And we have campaigns set up for each and every one of those.
Okay.
We use digital, but because we're in the promotional business, we're big advocates of lumpy mail. So if you truly want to get noticed, and believe me when I tell you, every day I get the next person that wants to sell me leads from scraping LinkedIn, calling me Neil P. I guess we're real friends. And it's like, I always just say, does this really work? It can't work. Can it really work? And so this week I got caught on an appointment with somebody. I was like, oh, you don't have an agenda for this, do you? You just wanted to get me on the phone and try to sell me something. This is not good. So anyways, I ask for an agenda each time now. So if you've got, as an example, if someone is new, a new territory, new business, new product set, they're out and they're networking, they're going to chamber events, they have going to cocktail parties, wherever. They've got their talk track, they've got their 30-second commercial, whatever you want to call it. Now, just because, so this certainly would be in a referred situation, just because this person enjoyed your conversation and thought you were smart and you're funny, or they might be remotely interested, does not mean they're sitting waiting by the phone for you to call or your magic email. Mm-hmm. You better get them in queue and you better systematically market to them. We believe, at least in the bare minimum of the seven touch theory, that you have to have seven significant touches in order to get somebody's attention. And in this world, you know, it may even be beyond that, you know.
Right.
So that's in a referred situation. So even your customers who you currently have, if you want to sell them a new product set or something, I'd respect them and I'd make sure I'm just going to call, hey, you know, obviously you can call them and try to get an appointment and see them, but absent of that, get them into queue. Direct mail, and I'm not selling direct mail today, was up in 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just speak about the, you know, the seven steps or whatever the case may be. Can you give the audience some examples? Let's say you meet somebody in the elevator. There may be potential. There may not be potential. What would you envision as part of those steps?
So let's say we do get contact information.
Mm-hmm.
So I would clearly, I'm not opposed to digital. I just don't want it to be everything. Certainly a follow-up email. Certainly great. You know, it was great to see you. Yada, yada, yada. Here's some of the things we talked about. Love to chat with you another time. But just a little follow-up, simple follow-up. I'm not talking about, again, just, you don't have to get all creative and whatnot. Just do it quickly, at least within 24 hours. Otherwise, they're going to forget you.
Right, right.
Real memorable.
Right.
And then the most obvious thing is that you want to have proper contact information in order to do all this.
Right.
And then, sure, why not leave them a voicemail? You're going to get voicemail most of the time. Mm-hmm. So leave them a nice voicemail. Mm-hmm. Don't bug them. Don't be overbearing. And then somewhere in the next 2 weeks, 10 days, make sure they open up a piece of mail from you. We send things like this. Simple right. pen with a yep. QR code on it. This is my bar tips pen. These are the ones I give out to waitresses and bartenders and all that. And you might well imagine the QR code goes right to the website to buy my book. But the whole notion is that it's going to come in some sort of dimensional mail.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have tracking because once they have it, you want to talk to them within 24 hours. A new thing I've discovered that we can do with QR codes, and that is we have a new product that we're working with, MerchBots, where that QR code takes you to a MerchBot, and then the engagement starts. The analytics from what I've heard from my research with this vendor, is staggering. The length of time people go back to that to stay engaged. For instance, in this certain presentation he made was where somebody gave out something like this at a trade show. 90 days later, they were still talking to the bot.
So basically, you know, you have seven touch points. And does that happen over a certain period of time or not necessarily?
Sure. I mean, I think it's really up to the business. We usually do 2 a month, right? And then hopefully, you know, you get contact,
right?
Get some sort of engagement. But we always have the piece de resistance is a last ditch box, which is completely decorated with their logo outside, with multiple things inside, with the stuff, with your one sheeter that you want to walk through.
Right.
And then the hope is, right, Linda, we got them before that. We bring the box with us. We take them through it and then leave them with all of the fun swag.
Other items. So you try to touch them at least twice a month.
Yeah. At least, you know, from a physical standpoint and then, you know, the digital stuff. We don't like to, I'm not a big, I mean, some of these, the stuff online now, it just staggers me. The amount of emails I get from one group, one person.
Have you done any studies around the success rate?
All of what we do and what I've written about is anecdotal. I just go from my experience and how we've grown.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, I've tried to get, you know, direct mail in and of itself has got, you know, a decent response rate. Nobody, and I've tried my darndest to find somebody that's got tracking, got data on lumpy mail.
Mm-hmm.
And even in our associations, they've really not done a good job of tracking that.
Right.
I can just tell you that, you know, again, it's from our experience and our success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's going to get mad at you because they opened up and you gave them a mug.
Of course. So your 7-point touch point process is typically like a physical product. It could be a direct mailer, it could be a pen, it could be a mug, it could be a box of cookies. Is that accurate?
Anything dimensional. You want them to open because it gets open. Mm-hmm. Think of it as the multiple emails you get is the same thing as if you get multiple pieces of mail that have got, you just toss them. I mean, we do it. Right. I think the average person does. And again, I've got no data on that, but I'm just anecdotally saying I toss this stuff. And so we know that when people, here's an example for you. You can't see my name. So here's something that we do every year. You can, mm-hmm. probably can't see it all that well, but my name is on that beer, dough, whatever. Mm-hmm. And people wait for these every year. It's the digital age, right? Nobody uses paper calendars every year. Every year, we've got at least a handful of people that call us. You guys sending the calendars this year? You think it's the thing we get most thanked for, and it's the cheapest thing we've ever done.
Awesome. Well, before I get to my last question, I just want to take a moment and thank the audience for listening in today. And if you like what you are hearing today, please hit like, share, or subscribe. So is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience before we wrap up today?
Yes, I've got a beautiful one today because I've experienced it today. And if you buy my book, Bar Tips, Everything I Needed to Know in Sales, I Learned Behind the Bar, you'll get this little tip. It's called Taking Ownership When a Business Problem Arises. So the guy who was my mentor in the food business, I'm chasing him around, trying to follow him, get because he's tops of the trees in the stack rankings and all that.
Yeah.
What the magic pill is. And he said, after all this other stuff, and he's kind of a little bit of a wise guy, but you get in front of a chef or hotel manager, whatnot, he completely changed. In the end, he said, Neil, if you learn nothing else from me, remember when anything goes wrong, start here. What was my role in this? How could I have done better? Did I give the order right? Before you start, in those days, it could have been the warehouse person, the guy in the truck did it. That customer service girl doesn't know what she's doing. Who looks good in that? Nobody.
Right.
Hey, you know what? And if you can solve that problem without them even knowing, all the better. Now, nobody looks bad. Just go solve it.
Right.
Don't argue about it. Don't get in a back and forth. And if you've got one bar story before we go, the great example of this was Dennis Mayer. I worked at a place called Kia's in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know where that is. Yep.
Right. I opened it 42 years ago.
Okay.
And Dennis was this guy, way too smart to be hanging around with us pouring drinks, but he was working right to my side. And I heard this woman came up to the bar and asked for a vodka martini extra dry. And for your audience, a vodka martini extra dry is vodka. All right. So Dennis poured it just the way he always does. Puts, ices down the glass, pours it over ice, strains it into the glass, puts it down in front of the woman. This isn't dry enough. Of course, Dennis walks by me and he goes, been doing this 15 years, haven't put a drop of vermouth in a drink yet, in a martini yet. So what does he do? Ices down the glass, puts it in front of her, pours the vodka. Not in a showy way, not in a look at me way, not look at, no, he just poured it so that she could see. Put it over, poured it into the glass or put it in front of her. She goes, that's the one. So the lesson here is he could have gotten a beef. He could have told his story. He could have, the same story he told me. And then next thing the other customers are hearing this. And the place lost 2 ounces of booze.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
So,
So
these are the types of things that we talk about. They're not.
Right.
They're not nationally studied.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to show you back up with all this data, but I tell you what, you talk to a bartender about this when I hand out this book with the other or people that are in sales,
right?
That worked in the hospitality business. It's like, I remember that. So
that's good.
This is the pearl of wisdom.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. So thanks very much for sharing your insights with our audience. Can you tell them how to get in touch with you?
Sure. It's Neil, N-E-I-L, at positiveactivity.net. That's where you'll find me, my book, my program. And so there you go.
Great. Well, thank you for tuning in to the B2B Brand 180 podcast today. We hope that you found the insights and strategies shared to be valuable and actionable. Again, I'm Linda Fanaris, host of the B2B Brand 180 podcast and CEO of Millennium Agency. You can visit us at mill.agency or just connect with me on LinkedIn. It's a couple of books I'd love to share with you that you can pick them up at Amazon. One is called Claim Your White Space, Why It's Critical to Your Business Success. And the second one is Passion Plus Profits, Build a Powerhouse Brand That Sells. And just as a reminder, if you like what you heard today, please feel free to like, share, or subscribe. Thank you for listening in.